right, everybody. Welcome back to another Fish Bites podcast. As you can see, I'm the one talking this time. Deputy Sports Editor Andre Fernandez, your host this time around with my boy Jordan McPherson, who happens to be in Tampa getting ready for that series between the Citrus Series between the Marlins and the Rays, two games on the west coast of Florida. We are back with this other episode to talk a little bit about, Jordan, what has happened. Now, I know they broke the streak, but what has happened to this Miami Marlins team? They left it in the first half. I mean, they didn't pick it up after the All-Star break. But first of all, how's Tampa?
Tampa, so far, the about 8 minutes that I've had to see of it outside of the drive over the Skyway Bridge was, again, get to come over here once or so a year. I got some family over here I'm hopefully going to be able to see during a little bit of downtime I have out here. But I love Tampa. I mean, it's a nice area. I know, again, how people feel about the trop itself, that's one thing. But Tampa, St. Pete, I have an appreciation for the area. I like being around here. But, yeah, Tampa so far, so good.
You know, they always slam the trop. And I think the trop, I'm not, like, a huge fan. But at the same time, I feel like it sometimes it gets a little, like, too much hate. You know what I mean?
I agree. It's not one of my top ballparks, but it's not one of my least favorite ballparks. And also, It gets the bonus points just like Lone Depot Park. It has a roof. You never have to worry about delays. You never have to worry about a tarp going on the field. You know the game is going to be played as scheduled. So it gets props for that.
Could stadiums be made maybe a little nicer? Maybe, yeah. But I do give them credit for that. And I think MLB in the future take a page from that. And I think they have because, you know, like the Rangers now have a roof as well. Right. You know, the more weather gets to be a problem, you know, it's just easier and easier to have one. But anyways, the Rays, the Marlins lost 8 in a row. They did break the streak, like we said. Little bit, you know, dicey, though. They blow another ninth inning lead, and then, you know, the runner on second helps a little bit. They get the win. Fine. And you could say, if you're the glass half full type, that this is a good time to catch the Rays. They just let the lead slip in the AL East. The Orioles have taken over for them. But let's get to the bottom line, what we said before. From what you've seen, Jordan, why has this team kind of left its effectiveness, its success in the first half so far? Why are they struggling to get it back?
Oh, I mean, the shortened drive it is they're getting in their own way. I mean, the offense they had through the nine games since the break, they're averaging about 9 hits a game, 82 hits overall in 9 games, but they're hitting 195 with runners in scoring position. They've hit the 9 more double plays, which brings them up to an MLB leading 106. The second most in MLB is, I believe, 81 by the Blue Jays. So you're seeing this team get guys on base and then do nothing with it. They're only averaging about 3 runs per game since the break ended. And normally that's fine if the pitching's doing well, but the pitching has not been doing well. Again, as we mentioned, the bullpen, they've blown 4 saves, all 4 save opportunities they've had since the break ended. They've blown all of them. AJ Puck has struggled in the closer role since they got back. JT Chargois, Dylan Floro, their top 2 right-handed relief options, just haven't been reliable. And this for both of them goes before the break as well. So you're seeing some stuff with the bullpen, it being taxed, and you're seeing the offense outside of Luis Arraez being the table come up in the clutch like they did so much during that first half of the season when they had everything, when they were able to have all the comeback wins and the walk-offs and the one-run wins and all that type of stuff. You're just not seeing it yet as they come back from the second half of the season. And this also goes back to why it was so important for them to really build up what they did in that first half when they had that soft stretch of that soft portion of the schedule, when they faced Oakland, they faced Kansas City, yada, 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 and went into the break 14 over 500. You knew a losing streak was going to happen. Did you know it was going to be an 8-game losing streak? No, you didn't. But the fact that they were able to go into the break 14 over 500, it helped mitigate some of the damage done by that losing streak, because even with a 1-8 start coming out of the break, they're still 7 over 500. And now they enter this week, they're still within a half game of the final wild card spot and one full game behind the top wild card spot. So even with this big stretch, yes, it hurt, but if they're able to find a way to, even if it's not completely what they did in that first half, if they can at least start finding ways to play in a sense of how they did in the first half, they're still in a position to make a push over these final 2 months.
Yeah, and I mean, the bullpen is a big part of that because, you know, they were very solid throughout, for the most part, throughout the season, and different pieces, which is the thing that, you know, Skip had talked about before. But, I mean, four blown saves, and you just don't want to have that feeling, no matter, and you know, where you're like that unreliable feeling going into the ninth inning, you know, no matter who's on the mound. And that's how it kind of felt. And then what the sucky part was, you're facing a team like the Rockies, a beatable team, and you drop two out of three, and you're very close to dropping all of them because of the same problem. And that's what was bad. I mean, even on Sunday, when it seemed like it was in the bag, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, maybe they get at least this one, take a breath on Monday and head into Tampa. Before they did, oh, great, here we go again, another blown lead in the ninth, and it continues. And then this bullpen, as taxed as it's been, that's the one concern. That's one of the concerns, I would say, especially, you know, with the way they've had to mix and match a little bit of with the rotation because of injuries and whatnot. You know, then Cueto comes in and delivers a great start, but it goes to waste. You know, so like that the bullpen, and we've talked about what they could potentially do in the next, you know, 10, 11 days, or no, less than that now, less than a week or so coming up for the trade deadline, in terms of what they could add to it. Can they add another righty, balance it out? And now you're not even thinking in terms of which arm, but just maybe just some depth, some help when it comes to that side of it, because that's the only way they're going to survive down the stretch, if they have, you know, can at least get a little bit of that reliability going again in the ninth.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that also comes down to figuring out who ends up doing that role. Does Skip Schumacher keep A.J. Puck in that spot? Does he revert to Tanner Scott having that role? And again, Tanner's been fantastic in the eighth inning. I think he's up to 71 strikeouts over 60-some-odd innings. He's been steady in the eighth inning, but we saw what he was like last year when he was great in the eighth inning, and then every ninth inning in a safe situation was like walking a tightrope. Do you think there with him mentality-wise when he goes eighth, ninth?
Right.
They trade for a guy who can end up becoming.
And they both let him slip. Yeah.
Yeah. Or do they? And then also it also reverts back to some stuff with the bullpen. Never thought I'd be saying this back at the start of the season, but wow, how much they're missing Andrew Nardi right now. That guy, with them losing him in those sixth, seventh inning type roles, they're trying to find other guys to fill the gap of being the extinguisher, the guy who can come in a tough situation. And they're having to throw Dylan Floro in there, JT Chargois in there, Oscar Brazoban at times. And they're having mixed results, whereas when Andrew Nardi was in there before the triceps injury, he was the guy who he went in there and you knew he was going to shut it down.
Right.
So now with them having to find other people to fill those spots before they even get to the back end, you're seeing some of those little holes that are coming in when they're not at full strength. Right. And just a quick note on Nardi, he's starting a rehab assignment this week in Jacksonville. The hope is that he's back by the end of the week. And just because you touch on him, just have to give a shout out to what Johnny Cueto's done these first two outings that he's done. Comes in out of the bullpen, his first outing in Baltimore, that Sunday game, throws three shutout innings, and then goes six strong in his first start back with them throwing him back into the rotation on Saturday. Goes into the seventh, gives up a leadoff single, and then JT Chargois relieves him, gives up the game-tying home run there. But to see what Cueto was doing, nobody obviously was expecting him to do that in his first two starts. But if he is able to be a reliable piece, it really helps the Marlins with some of the problems they did have in terms of that rotation depth. Remember, Trevor Rogers fell on the IL. He's not throwing. Eury Pérez is in the minors because they have to monitor his innings. You need to see what happens with Edward Cabrera down the stretch, Jesus Luzardo down the stretch, Braxton Garrett down the stretch. And obviously, Sandy is still very unsandy-like this season. So if you can get reliability, not necessarily dominance, but just reliability out of Johnny Cueto in one of those spots over these final 2 months, you take that and run.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with how the season started with him. The one inning and then getting hurt and then not knowing what you were going to get when he was struggling with those minor league rehab assignments. And I get it. He's a veteran. Obviously, when you're out down there working on a rehab assignment, you're not necessarily looking at the results. For him, it's the focus is try to get the pitches ready, try to get everything ready so that when it counts, he's ready. But when you see the numbers that he put up, you're just scratching your head going, is everything going to be ready? And turned out it was. So we saw two outings so far. Let's see what happens as he continues on. But had to give a shout out to what Cueto was able to do these first those first two outings.
Yeah, that's what they hoped for. I mean, that's why they got him. But of course, obviously, those are the big question marks, and rightfully so, with the injury concern, and you know, and he's up there now a little bit at this point in his career. But you know, I mean, is he going to do exactly what he did the other day? But if he can do at least a little bit of that, and at least give you some innings, that would be a huge help. And obviously, stay on the mound too, because you don't want him getting hurt again. But we'll see how that process evolves overall. But I mean, looking at this series, you know, I know it's just a two gamer, but it's always fun when they play each other. I mean, it's a series though. One thing that struck me that you even mentioned, you reinforced that point a few minutes ago, was these two teams mirroring each other right now, just in the sense that they're both slumping. They're both kind of, you know, riding out the, you know, the big wave they had early on to kind of build a little bit of a cushion, especially in Tampa's case, the way they came out historically good at the beginning of the season and were, you know, whatever it was, 29-9 at the time, something like that. And, you know, now they've seen that slip away. So it's a desperate, not a desperate, completely desperate Rays team, but a Rays team that is thinking to itself, okay, they still have an extra cushion because of how good they were in the wild card picture, but they still would like to regroup and get back in it and see if they can take back this division from the Orioles, while of course holding off the Jays and the Yankees and the Red Sox, you know, in the AL East, which is always, you know, a wild one. But, you know, Tampa's dominated this series to, you know, 18-2 for them over the past 4 years, you know, so what can the Marlins do when you look at this matchup, Jordan? What can the Marlins do? I mean, it's very brief, but it's two wins. It's a series where you don't want to go 0-2. You want to come away maybe with at least one. So the win on Sunday isn't just a fluke, just a little blip. You start, it seems to be kind of turning the tide a little bit, because after that, as we know, August is on the horizon, and that whole schedule in August is going to be brutal.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you look at this matchup, I mean, for me, it's starting with, which it seems like almost every big series comes to, you got to look at these starting pitching matchups, which both of them are beauties of matchups on paper. Tuesday, we got Edward Cabrera against Tyler Glasnow. Cabrera was solid his first start back from the IL in St. Louis, threw 5 no-hit innings and then gave up a solo home run in the sixth. But again, he was steady. His velo looked great. And if he's able to match up against Tyler Glasnow, that gives the Marlins a chance. And then if you look at the Wednesday matchup, you got Sandy against Zach Eflin, who Eflin's been having a great year for them as well. Tyler Glasnow's been phenomenal. And then, I mean, they lucked out that they're not facing McClanahan with everything going on there. But again, like you mentioned, both of these teams, Tampa's 3-7 since the break, two of those three wins coming against Kansas City Royals. Then they got swept by the Rangers and lost 3-4 to the same Baltimore team that swept the Marlins coming out of the break. But this is Tampa still, even when they're down, they're dangerous. We've seen that with them. Obviously, the starting pitching, their offense, they basically pick a guy out of the hat and he's going to have a big game. Randy Arozarena is still Randy Arozarena. Wander Franco is still Wander Franco. You got Brandon Lau. You've got basically just pick whoever you want, and they're going to be able to find a guy who has a moment. The Marlins, they need the starting pitching to set them up. And like I said before, with how they dealt with during the losing streak, they need to make sure they don't get in their own way. They need to make sure that when Luis Arraez gets a hit, that they're not striking out and hitting to a double play to end the inning. They need somebody on the offense outside of Luis Arraez to step up and make a big play and be able to get those clutch hits. They're able to do that, and I think they can at least split the series, and that is the goal. You need to get at least one, like you said. They can't just let that one win happen on Sunday and then be like, okay, well, we lost two more. They can't make it 10 out of 11 losses going out of this break, especially since all they have left before the trade deadline is a weekend series against the Detroit Tigers. And the next thing you know, we're flipping to August, where, again, you have the trade deadline, the Marlins are going to have decisions they have to make. And if they can take at least one of two here and handle business against Detroit, it'll make the front office feel a lot better about where they stand heading into August 1st trade deadline.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I was thinking of it in the sense of you don't want to let the stretch kind of spiral even more, but it's critical specifically in this week when you're trying to decide how much of a buyer are we, how much of a seller are we, let's say, you know, around the league. In their case, they're trying to be buyers. They're kind of balancing out right now, maybe, or you would think, potentially, how much and how much to sacrifice, you know, weighing the short term, the long term, depending on their chances. I mean, it's not going to drastically shift too much, even if they did go badly, I think, because they're the way having the third wild card is, they're still going to be in it. I mean, worst thing that can happen, they fall 2-3 games behind. You're not going to feel like, oh, crap, we're screwed. No, it's not anything like that. But it is interesting to see how that always works in the days leading up to, you know, a trade deadline like it is right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. And again, the Marlins are at the point with where they are in the standings and how much of a cushion there is between where they stand and the rest of the group that's chasing. It's basically a 5-team race for 3 spots in the wild card. You've got whoever's going to be second in the NL Central between the Brewers and the Reds. You've got the Giants, you've got the D-backs, you've got the Marlins, and you've got the Phillies. Those five competing for 3 spots, and all of them are bunched within a game of each other right now heading into this week. So no matter what, the Marlins are going to buy. But again, like you said, it's how much of their future do they sacrifice for what they're going to do for this this push over these 2 months, and then what they hope is going to be into October. And really, 2 needs stand out among this team. They need at least one more impact bat in that lineup. And like we mentioned with the bullpen, they need another high leverage reliever, and primarily a right-handed high leverage reliever, because their main high leverage guys right now are lefty AJ Puck, lefty Tanner Scott, and once he's healthy, lefty Andrew Nardi and lefty Steven Oker. See a trend there? And then with their righties right now, it's Huascar Brazoban, Dylan Floro, and JT Chargois. Floro has sort of found himself out on the outside looking in of the high leverage spots. JT Chargois is basically hit or miss depending on where he is. And Brazoban's role basically has been dictated on what the rest of the bullpen is doing. If you need him to be the multi-inning guy, he's the multi-inning guy. If he's the mop-up duty guy, if they need a mop-up guy, he's the mop-up guy. If they need somebody to slide into the early setup role, they slide him into the early setup role. So they don't have a tried and true right-handed guy who they can put into the eighth or ninth inning and go, this is our guy, we know he can get it. So with that, I mean, a few of the options, I'll start with the relievers and I'll work my way back to the potential bats they can go for. Start with the Royals. Scott Barlow, currently their closer, seems like one of the main options out there. They already traded Chapman over to, I forgot where they sent, to Texas.
Texas, yeah.
And Chapman over to Texas already. Barlow has been the Royals' closer. Obviously, they're not going anywhere at this point. He's definitely someone who's going to be on the block. The Cardinals, who have mentioned they're selling, Jordan Hicks and Ryan Helsley are the main two righties from them that you could see getting sent away. Another name to watch, Justin Lawrence from the Rockies, who did very well against Miami. Miami just got an up close and personal view of him. He's a good one, but also he's under team control still for a good bit. So that could cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could bring up the cost, and the Rockies don't necessarily have to send them away. Correct. Similar to what the Marlins were like last year, when it was like everyone was talking about, oh, the Marlins have to trade Pablo. Here's where his stock is. But because he was still under team control, unless the offer is right, the Rockies can say, no, we'll wait until the offseason, and then we'll make the move then.
Right. And then do you want to really fork over so much for a guy who right now is pitching well, but it's not like a truly, truly established name proven in the league either.
So yeah, exactly.
How much do you want to risk on that?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's the other point there. And then when it comes to the bats, the main name that I keep hearing and keeps getting linked to the Marlins, Nationals third baseman Jaime Candelario. He's on an expiring contract. He's due about $2 million the rest of the season. Switch hitter, above average defense at third base. Obviously, right now the Marlins have Gene Segura at third base, and we've seen the results or lack thereof for the most part of the season at third with Segura. Candelario entered the week hitting .254 with an .807 OPS, 15 home runs, and as an aside, Jorge Soler is the only Marlin with more home runs than that this season. 47 RBI, 57 runs scored. He's been producing for a Nationals lineup that doesn't really have much protection around him. So if you add him to this lineup, obviously he's not the big name, the big impact name that everyone would say, oh yeah, he's an automatic guy who's going to completely change everything. But it is another quality bat that even if it's in the 5-6-7 hole in the lineup, it adds that much more length to the lineup, especially when you consider where the Marlins stand. They're hopefully going to have Jazz back in the next month, which that in and of itself, just from the bat perspective, should be able to bring a game changer into the lineup. So if they can get a guy like Candelario, or even a guy like, if you look at from the Cardinals, who again, are going to be selling. If they get a guy like a Dylan Carlson or a Paul DeJong or one of those type of pieces, again, Candelario is still the name that I'm hearing more than anybody else. And then if they were
kind of, it kind of fits the, in terms of, I guess, in terms of salary too, and in terms of the type of player, like the kind of moves they made early on, which built the lineup you see today anyway. They didn't go for the big name, but you can get a guy who is productive, who is useful, and fits perfectly into the spot they want him to. And it sounds like, you know, a guy like Candelario would probably fit that a little bit more. So kind of tracks is the type of move they can make at the deadline without, again, going back to that don't pay too much problem.
Yeah. And the thing, and then the only other name that I've heard, which again, it's far more less likely in my opinion, especially since we don't know if he's going to be available, but where the Chicago Cubs are, again, they signed a pretty good lefty bat to a 1-year prove it deal this offseason. He certainly proved it. And if Cody Bellinger ended up on the trade market, and remember the Marlins did pursue him in the offseason. So, so if he was to come onto the market, again, left-handed hitter who can play both center field and first base. So even if you start him out, if you hypothetically the Marlins get him, start down center field until Jazz comes back, and then Jazz comes back, you still want Jazz in center field. Okay, Bellinger plays first the rest of the year.
Right.
And
this would be a rental, obviously. Yeah. So again, it would be okay in terms of that part of it contractually too.
Exactly. So he is a rental. He has a mutual option for the 2024 season, which we all know he's probably not going to take. Or at least one side isn't, because he's going to be able to take the heyday this year. Again, he's hitting .319 with a .918 OPS this year. If the Marlins want to make a big splash and were able to swing that, it would be.
You want to hope also that maybe he's seeing it in a way of a springboard toward maybe a big contract next year with someone else. Show that he's still Bellinger, productive Bellinger, that he can be, like he's showing, all that stuff too. So it works kind of both ways.
Yeah, it definitely does. And again, that's all August 1st, 5 p.m. deadline. And that's going to be fun to watch. And really, the trade deadline itself, there's so much unknown still because, again, like you mentioned, with the third wild card spot and with both central divisions being, well, bad. It's really, there's so much uncertainty with some of those teams that are.
What gave you that idea, Jordan? What, the cellar-dwelling Red Sox are better than like the entire Central Division? Oh no, yeah.
Well, when I look at the AL Central and a team that's one under 500, in the Cleveland Guardians are only three games out of first place.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Every time I look at the bottom of the AL East, and certain people know why. Mm-hmm. You know, it's frustrating when you see that. Yeah.
No, it still lines up where the entire AL East is still better than the AL Central. Mm-hmm. The Yankees and Red Sox are still a half game above the Minnesota Twins right now.
Oh, no doubt.
So with Cleveland being a game under 500, but only three games out of the wild card spot, with looking at the AL, with the NL Central, obviously Milwaukee and Cincinnati are the top two, but Chicago could still technically be in it if they wanted to say they were in it. Obviously, we have no idea how San Diego is going to play things out after making the big splash this offseason and now falling as far behind as they are.
Yeah. Well, since the addition of the third spot, it's muddied that picture every time. Like every time we've had a trade deadline since, you know, it makes it interesting. Like, how close are we to giving up, or how close are we to saying, or how much do we stick to it? How much faith do we have that we could turn it around?
Yeah,
and it really muddles the picture.
And doing that impacts every other team that already knows that it's in or that it's out, because
you're trying to sell
line that has the bigger names. You obviously want to prioritize them, but as we get closer and closer and closer each day that goes by, it's like when is the first domino going to fall? And when that first domino falls, how quickly do the rest of the dominoes start going?
Right.
That's like why this next week is going to be so fascinating.
Right. Like the Nationals, like the Rockies, got teams that are out of it right now and they're waiting there. And they can't do business, or they can't pull the trigger on deals because, you know, the teams they're talking to are kind of in a holding pattern until the last minute, pretty much. So, that's, you know, that's the whole thing with when you do one of these things and you, again, the third wild card. I wasn't like a huge fan of it, only because of things, not necessarily because of things like that, but just the watering down of it. But I do get from the point of view of, you know, it keeps more teams in it, keeps more teams, you know, now someone that would be out of it by June or July might still stay in it till maybe closer to September. And, you know, it has its goods and its ups and downs, but it definitely muddles the picture a lot more. So, like you said, it'll be interesting to see, you know, once again, these Marlins in Tampa. Pretty cool. We'll wrap this by talking, jumping ahead of that real quick. Just a quick little tease to Miguel Cabrera weekend at the ballpark, and I'm sure you're looking forward to that, Jordan. What I know, you know, I was graduating college when Miguel Cabrera was homering as a rookie for the Marlins in our feel old moment of the week here. But what do you think of your thoughts of Miggy, the career he's had, and how much are you looking forward to this weekend just to get to see him one more time in person?
Yeah, this weekend's going to be fun. Again, I never really got the chance to really see Miguel Cabrera in person that much. This is my first time getting to cover him as a reporter. So,
oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I thought maybe at some point Detroit or something.
The only other time the Marlins played the Tigers was my first year on the beat, 2019, and it was when I was still pseudo-helping on the high school side, and it overlapped with our high school breakfasts.
Oh, okay.
So David Wilson,
I did that trip. I remember.
David
when I was
Wilson ended up going on that trip. I missed that series. I missed the Garrett Cooper go-ahead grand slam.
You can blame me for leaving and going to the Athletic and leaving no high school guy behind. That's what screwed you over on that one.
Yeah. So I'm excited that I'm going to get my first experience getting to cover Miguel Cabrera in person outside of the World Baseball Classic. I have to put that as the aside. I did get to cover a couple of his WBC games. But to cover him from an MLB side, I'm excited for this weekend. I'm excited to see what the Marlins are going to be doing over the weekend, because Fridays, they've been doing their flashback Fridays, reminiscing over the 30 years of the franchise history. They're going to have a bunch of alumni back from the 03 team. Saturday for their Heritage Night, they're doing Venezuelan Heritage Night. A lot of the top Venezuelan players former MLB players are expected to be at the ballpark. The Marlins are going to be doing ceremonies for Miggy both of those days. So it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of emotion, a lot of just getting to look back and reminisce about what he's done. I mean, obviously the 3,000 hits, the 500 home runs, obviously being part of that 03 World Series, just, again, it's been an incredible career to watch from a distance, and it's just, it's hard to fathom that it's actually going to be coming to an end in about 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing in person on TV the famous battle he had with Roger Clemens in the World Series. And I found that clip on social the other day. I think on Twitter somebody had posted it or something. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, man, we didn't appreciate that at the time. Like, thinking, how good is this kid? That when you – it's not just the end result of that at bat. Go back and watch that at bat, how he battled the approach he had at 20 years old and facing a legend like the Rocket in the World Series. On top of that, I mean, it just showed you how special. Like at the time, you were like, "Wow, we didn't even know how good that he was going to be." And look, you know, triple crown on top of that. To me, that the cherry on top to an unbelievable career to do something as hard as it is to do it to achieve a triple crown. So, anyway, enjoy that, I'm sure, my friend. And on that note, we'll leave it at that. We'll be back next week to recap that Marlins Tiger series and to see how the Marlins are doing by then. You know, does the slump continue or do they break out of it against the Rays or the Tigers? We'll see. But Jordan, you take care, my friend. Have fun in Tampa. And I am Andre Fernandez, and we will see you guys next week on the Fish Bites podcast.